You're listening to The Robin and Boom Show, engaging the contemporary world with the great tradition. Find us on our YouTube channel, our Facebook page, or on our website at robinmarkphillips.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Now, here's today's co-host, Robin Phillips.
Jason, thank you for joining me in our virtual studio.
Right, our virtual studio. So, speaking of which, is reality being turned into a virtual hologram? Will we be reduced to little characters in a video game? Or will reality win out in the end?
Well, if we are the Matrix, how could we possibly know?
Well, we'd have to take the red pill, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. We absolutely would.
So, snow. Is this the worst winter you've ever had in Coeur d'Alene?
No, it is not the worst winter. The worst winter I had was actually the winter I first moved here, and everything else has seemed mild by comparison. But it's pretty bad. I got stuck in the snow the other day and got very chilled and then went down with flu for the rest of the week. I'm just recovering from that now. One of the challenges is that my truck doesn't have any heating in it. And so when you get stuck, things can get pretty uncomfortable pretty fast. So tell me about this class that you're teaching right now over in, it's at the University of Tartu, correct?
University of Tartu, yes. It starts Monday. It's an introductory course to how, in the Middle Ages, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam used philosophy.
Fascinating. How they employed Greek philosophy?
Yes. So what's interesting is that for all three religions, philosophy was synonymous with Greece. In fact, during the Christian period, during the patristic period, the Byzantine period, the Byzantine or Eastern Roman Orthodox Christians referred to philosophy as Hellene or Hellenistic or Greek. And that was synonymous with paganism. So the Byzantines did not regard themselves as Greeks at all. If you called them a Greek, that would have been an insult. Rather, they equated Hellenism with paganism, Christianity with Romanism. They saw themselves as Romans, and they used the flawed wisdom of the Hellenes. I think that's probably the best way to summarize their attitude. They never completely dismissed Hellenistic philosophy. They never fully embraced it either. They always saw it as something that was potentially valuable, but if you took it on its own, as something that could stand up on its own as a possible substitute for or rival to Christianity, then it would be extremely dangerous. And yes, certainly the greatest of the church fathers outside the monastic context were intimately familiar with Greek philosophy.
Is that similar to the approach taken by Islam and Judaism in the medieval period?
Yes. Even though they were cultural contacts of some kind with India, for them, philosophy was synonymous with the Greeks. Philosophy for medieval Christians, Jews, and Muslims meant Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, the Stoics, the Skeptics. Now, I think that within Islam, there was a possibility for having a higher view of philosophy than in Christianity, at least within Shiism, which has a tendency towards Gnosticism and rationalism. But now, many of our listeners will say, well, didn't Sunni Muslims reject philosophy? There's no one uniform policy towards philosophy in any of these three religions. You can find Byzantine scholars who had negative views of philosophy that could perhaps approach the skepticism of some Sunnis, but there are Sunnis who are very pro-philosophy. So it wasn't a uniform thing, but in general, the general view was that philosophy was the Greeks, philosophy was the same thing, what we call science and mathematics was all philosophy. It was all flawed wisdom. It was all something that was necessary, but something that could be dangerous if you took it too far. So there's always a creative tension between these religions and philosophy.
Could you explain kind of how this relates to what we want to be doing in this podcast and looking at contemporary issues through the lens of the great tradition? Many of our listeners may not be familiar with what we mean when we use terms like that. And if you could just explain that for our audience.
Absolutely. The people we're reaching are those who, like us, believe in the Western tradition. We believe in Western civilization. This is our home civilization, our mother civilization. Part of that is religion. For most of our listeners will be Christians. Those who aren't Christians will see Christianity as having a very big part, fundamental part, in Western civilization. Now, how do we apply this to contemporary issues? Questions about technology, gender, politics, the environment, schooling. To do this, we need to go beyond a superficial understanding of Western philosophy and the Christian tradition. We need to go into some depth about it. In a university course, the purpose is to go into as much depth as possible. For a radio podcast, that's not possible, it's not necessary, but we'll make reference to some of these deeper ideas. I would like to say that most of our problems are rooted in a false understanding of history. For example, many people just take it for granted that science and religion are enemies, they've always been enemies, and that Columbus believed the earth was round and everyone thought the earth was flat. That's absolutely contrary to the historical truth. Science and religion have been friends. Religion promoted science. There are only very few instances in which there's a conflict between science and religion. One of them, Galileo, is very famous, but everyone knew the earth was round. You know, it's this false history, this false understanding of history that's been propaganda for bulldozing the Western tradition.
And what wouldn't it be correct in saying that even with Galileo, the conflict was not so much between religion and science, but rather between scholastic science in the Aristotelian tradition and what we would call modern science?
That was part of it. That was part of it. Galileo was introducing a new way of doing science. And by the way, Galileo never called himself a scientist. They all called themselves philosophers. Galileo was doing a new kind of natural philosophy. And the conflict with the Catholic Church was partly because Catholic theology is so wedded to the scholastic tradition, especially as developed by figures such as Thomas Aquinas and Albertus Magnus, but also scriptural interpretation. So the position of Rome was that astronomy gives us hypotheses, mathematical hypotheses. It's fine to take the earth going around the sun as a hypothesis to save the appearances. That's a different thing from saying that it is the absolute truth. And saying if it's the absolute truth, that therefore the church must change its interpretations of scripture. In a way, 16th century Rome had the sort of view similar to postmodernism. The different aspects do the same thing. For the sake of astronomy, you could say the earth goes around the sun, but for the sake of biblical interpretation, you can't say that. And in some ways, I'd say that modern philosophers of science would agree more with Rome than with Galileo. It's all hypothetical in modern science.
In even modern astronomy?
To an extent. You know, we have greater intimate contact with the objects of astronomy than Galileo could have had, was even possible for Galileo. After all, no one was able to step on the moon until 1969. Galileo was able to change so much by using his telescope, but we've gone so far beyond that with satellites, with space exploration, and in our ability to do things such as spectroscopic analysis. We have an understanding of the material composition of astronomical objects in a way that simply was never possible before. So to sum up, astronomy is no longer simply a mathematical science the way it was for the medievals or for the ancients. For them, astronomy was solely about dealing with visual appearances and mathematically accounting for them. We have many more tools, and so we have a much deeper empirical knowledge of what's going on in the universe. But nevertheless, when it comes to the mathematical aspects of physics, we are still what 16th century Rome said. We're using hypotheses to save the appearances. This is especially the case with things such as theory of relativity. All it is a set of mathematical formulae that can save the appearances, explain phenomena in an efficient, simple, beautiful, plausible manner. That's a very different thing from saying it's absolute truth.
Yeah, but we've done empirical experiments that have proved Einstein's theory of general relativity.
We've done experiments that have not been able to falsify it. We've done experiments that are in conformity with it. That's a very different thing from saying it's proven. You know, so far, relativity has been consistent with what we've been doing. But, you know, they said the same thing about Newton. Before Einstein, you could have said, well, we had this, and we had this, and we had this. It was all consistent with Newton. Now, on one level, we still have a problem with relativity theory because we don't know how to reconcile it with quantum mechanics. We still don't have a unified theory of the whole of physics. What if it turns out that with a unified theory of physics, we'd have to go beyond Einstein the way Einstein went beyond Newton? We can't rule that out as a possibility.
That's fascinating. And I want us to explore some of the philosophical implications of that in later conversations. But I'm going to have to be going soon, so I want to just wrap up. Can you kind of bring some of the threads together? Can you explain what it is that we have to offer our listeners that may be a unique perspective, especially with your background in medieval history and philosophy? What is it that people can get from our podcast that is relevant to their lives today that they may not hear from other sources?
Well, you, Rob, and I, you also have very similar background on that. We both have scholarly expertise on medieval philosophy, just a little bit different emphases. So what we have to offer is the ability to go beyond immediate emotions. So much of our discourse is based upon people being triggered, having their buttons pressed by instantaneous, quick social media notifications, and people are being driven by their emotions, using language as emotional tools for signaling one's membership in tribes. And this is ripping America apart. It could rip the world apart. What we're doing is we're stepping back beyond that and giving the fundamentals, the basics of how philosophy and theology can enlighten and illumine the situation we're in today.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast. The Robin and Boom Show is made possible through the generous support of listeners like you. To become a patron of the show, go to robinmarkphillips.com and select the Robin Boom Show from the drop-down menu. If you have questions you'd like to have addressed on a future episode, send us a message through our Facebook page. Once again, thanks for listening.